Hey everyone, welcome. It's G here. Welcome to this episode of Elemental Awakening. I have an amazing guest today. His name is Richard Filk. He is a mindset and men's work facilitator slash coach. He's doing some amazing stuff. I met him through Elemental Wellness Studio and some mutual friends. And I've been wanting to dive a little deeper with Richard to get to know him. So in full disclosure, this is our first real deep conversation we're going to have, where I'm going to really get to ask him some interesting questions from the heart and share, you know, some of his story and some of the work he's been doing with you guys. So welcome to the show, Richard.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I really appreciate this opportunity to connect with you and dive into what we're creating.
Awesome. So I guess, you know, the basic way to start these conversations is a bit about yourself, some of the backstory of what maybe led you into what you're doing now as a coach, a mindset coach, and even more specifically into the specific field of men's work.
Awesome.
You can, yeah, so, you can start from as early as possible. That's relevant. That you
find. Yeah. The bulk of, much of my human experience so far has resolved around my interaction with my own mental health and the way in which it manifested as drug addiction for a good number of years. So it was, it started out as it often does, very recreationally and socially, casually using alcohol and pot at 14 and 15. But by the time I was 21, I was all the way into the throes of a very toxic heroin addiction. So from 21 through to 27, I was in tremendous amounts of pain and suffering as a result of mostly the choices that I was making, but also it was like situational and circumstantial as well. So there was this pain that had arisen in my life that I didn't have the tools to transcend and to heal on my own. So at 27, just over 3 years ago now, the fundamental shift took place where I finally surrendered. And we'll get into that, I'm sure, a little bit on this call. Because prior to that, I had been under the impression that I had to figure things out on my own. I had a very rigid concept of what it was to be a man. And that was intertwined with this perspective of being independent, being self-sufficient and sovereign, but from a place of just like, I got this, I don't need you, right? That was the narrative that was playing. And I don't really know where I picked that up. But when that finally broke, and when I finally like turned to the people that were close to me and were loving me and said, okay, I need help. And I welcomed people in, that's where the healing really began. So that was 3 years ago. And that's kind of where I consider very realistically the starting point of my healing of the like emotional and mental and psychological concerns that had arisen. So it was through opening up to the help of other people that I started to take on practices, tools, techniques, and a different way to interact with the world. So like, for example, stepping out of the victim mentality where things are happening to me and instead taking some responsibility for the life that I was living started to really change. It changed the internal landscape first, and then the external, you know, life that I was living started to sort itself out shortly afterward. So it's this that I now bring into my practice with my clients, and we have conversations around where a little more responsibility or accountability can be taken, and how to work with and both honor where we've been, but align with a little more clarity with where we're going. So I think that's good for now, but if you have any questions, we can dive in further.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you said you snapped out of the victimhood mentality, can you remember a specific moment that it was like a turning point where you had like an aha, or was like a gradual realization?
Yeah. So there's been dozens of those, maybe even like hundreds by now. There are definitely awakenings. There are spiritual experiences that I've had, you know, and the first one took place where it was actually as a result of my mom. And her new interaction with me. So what had happened was she had kept welcoming me back into her space. I would get sober. I'd start to get my life back together. And 2 to 3 months later, I would relapse and end up in the hospital or in a detox. So she continued to take me back in and feed me, clothe me, help me heal. But what it turned out is that manner of love that she was pushing on me that I wasn't taking and, you know, running with, there's this neediness inside me. Created a very codependent situation between me and her. And the pivotal moment came where she finally had said that she was able to love herself more than me. And she finally said, I've had enough. You know, you're out. You're on your own. I'm done. It was in that moment that I reached out for the people that, you know, sponsors in Alcoholics Anonymous, counselors and psychologists that I started to work with. And I started to reach for people that were truly well equipped to help me heal from the mental health and the drug addiction. And my mom got to just be my mom. So it was in that moment where she turned that love around and applied it to herself. And that was also, in fact, the maximal expression of love towards me, which is love for herself, because it was in that moment that my healing truly began. Had she not done that, I might have continued to do what I was doing and it would have gone a different way.
Amazing. So 3 years is not a long time to see such a transformation. Tell me a bit about how you sort of transitioned into a mentor and a coach from a recovering, heroin addict, and like what that was like. Was it immediate that, you know, cause I guess you sort of have to heal yourself before you can serve others. You know, was it an immediate calling for you? Like, what was that like?
I was completing a university degree and I was teaching yoga during the first year and a half of my recovery from heroin addiction. And during those years, I started to shift my perspective. And one of the things they taught me in AA was that addiction or alcoholism at its core is a manifestation of selfishness. And it's this like shadowy, dark kind of aspect of selfishness because it's a manifestation of taking. Like I'm taking a substance or a behavior or a person and I'm like interacting with it for the purpose of just making me feel better for a couple hours or less at a time, depending on what the substance is. So one of the first things that was said is that you've got to start to ask not what I can take, but what I can give. So I took that landed with me and I just started to run with it. I was looking for opportunities to help, like support, empower, guide, volunteer. Right. And I was like, what can I offer? What can I give? And that was truly one of the most magical transformations and experiences that I got to be able to work with. So it started out like within the context of specifically substance abuse issues that people have. But then people are showing up to me saying like, I'm in a relationship with someone who does this, that, or the other. What can I do? Right. Or my mom is doing these other things, or my job is really like my boss. So like people have all sorts of issues that they're struggling with. And I started to find that I have a really good ability to support them and help them shift their perspective from the current one that they have into another one that will just serve them better. So along the months, like people would say, like, you're good at this. Like you should do some coaching. You should, you know, create a career out of this. And I experienced resistance to it because the yoga was pretty all right. And because it was a comfortable place that I was in teaching yoga full time. And then COVID happened, yoga studios shut down. And it took me about 2 weeks to pivot and to start taking clients online in Zoom. So actually just yesterday, I finished my first 12-week package. Like we completed a 12-week package with my first client, which was 12 weeks ago. So I'm very new to generating an income and referring to myself as a life set mindset coach. But I freaking love it. It's been absolutely beautiful to be able to give this gift to people that truly want to have hard conversations. So it's kind of entered into my field quite recently.
Yeah, it's first of all, congratulations. That's amazing. We've been playing with this word called selfness, which is somewhere between being selfish, which is like you mentioned about taking for yourself, and selfless, which can also be another form of not having enough self-worth where you're giving everything away with nothing in return, where it's like you're giving, but you're also receiving or taking part in the receiving as you're giving at the same time. So it's this embodying the selfness of being included in the giving, which is a nice reciprocal sort of energy. So I think that's a beautiful way to put it. And that's what we've been sort of playing with. I have a question because one thing about the whole AA thing and the 12-step programs that I have a hard time wrapping my head around is the terminology that, you know, for the rest of your life, you're recovering alcoholic or recovering addict or whatever, I guess the type of support group based on that system is there any point where you are fully healed where you say like, hey, like I'm good. Like I'm no longer recovering. I'm full. And you know, if I want to have one beer, I can, and not feel guilty about it and not go into a full on relapse because of that. What's your perspective on that? I guess I don't have enough firsthand experience, but from what I hear talking to people, something about it just doesn't completely sit right with me. It could be like ignorance or lack of understanding, but what's your perspective on that?
That's a fantastic question. And that's ultimately, I like to consider an internal process and an internal question. So I would never tell anyone that they will always be an addict and never be able to heal. But I also don't know if the healing that I've been able to experience is necessarily available to everyone else. I do understand that some people start to really struggle with drug addiction. They get into a recovery program, and AA is just one of the many available. And then they get sober, right? They get off the drug. And then you can just coast. If that's the human experience that you want to have, and if the story is that, like, you know, I'm like smoking cigarettes, drinking lots of coffee, I'm not happy in my relationship, and I'm not happy in my job, but I'm not smoking crack, like, cool. On the one hand, great. Like, that's fantastic that, like, there's been an improvement. But if that's, like, where you want to stay, you know, that's fine. But I was started to become interested in more. So when I came into AA, it was those, you know, sayings and what they were telling me, it was those ideologies that really saved my life. But it took about a year and a couple months to start to recognize that they're impeding my continuous growth and evolution. And I did a risky thing, which was to start to reintroduce more mindful use of substances. So it's definitely a process of you know, introspection, and it has to be a like deep inner understanding of what is possible and what is capable for any individual human.
So when you say mindful use of substances, would something like that immediately get you rejected or thrown out of a group if you sort of shared that, like, hey, I found some medicine or substances that have really been integral to fully, like, healing or taking my healing to the next level? Is that something that is, like, not acceptable in some of these programs?
Yeah. So when it comes to the principles in 12-step programs, you are either an addict or you're not. There isn't much of it in between. The lens through which I view the world is that there are many different grays on any different spectrum that you want to paint. So I don't presently qualify for, you know, a 12-step program because I don't designate myself and I don't struggle with drug addiction anymore. Now, that's not to say I'm presently going to lay the claim that I'm fully healed and I don't have addictive components to my human. They just show up in different ways and I use different tools to navigate them. But I'm more and more interested in kind of like the spaces in between these kind of like black and white statements.
Interesting. So I guess I'll throw another question at you. Do you think, you know, in a perfect world or maybe a more evolved way, that some of these programs should have opportunity to interlace with each other without feeling guilt and shame around the potential for medicines in like a program such as these recovery programs? Or do you think they're just should always be completely separate?
I think ultimately what would be best is to empower each individual to sooner or later come to the point where they're able to make decisions for themselves. And what I do see a lot of happening in certain recovery communities is that I'm coming from a place that's tremendously broken with no resources, no remaining ideas of like what I can do to like get my life into a little bit of order. And then what we can do is we can latch on to someone that tells us, you know, this is where you walk, this is where you stand, this is how you sit, this is how you pray. And it works, right? Like it really works well and the person's life gets a lot better. Yeah, so the structure is really good and really helpful, again, in my experience in the initial phases, but then there came a time where I just decided that I wanted more freedom. And I do honor that not everyone wants that, right? Each of the human experiences that we get to have are beautifully unique. But I do like always come from a place of curiosity with the people that I chat with and that I share with. And we try to unpack what's underneath all these layers.
Interesting. And I know it's hard to like recommend, but if someone from there asks you about your experiences, is there some sort of disclaimer that you give them when it comes to like curiosity about moving past that structured life into like using plant medicines or something like that? You know, like after you openly talking about them, you know, I'm sure some people may have approached you. Does that happen at all? Because I know from my perspective, like with the documentary, I get a ton of people that reach out to me and they're like, hey, do you think that this is right for me? Or should I try this? Or, you know, like, how do you approach, you know, those kind of inquiries when you know people have had sort of addictive tendencies in the past or come from that sort of system or structure?
Mm-hmm. One thing that comes through when you use terminology, like, do you think this is right for me? I always like come back to the space of not knowing this, to the space of just like, a lot of the times I don't know what's right for me, and I never pretend to give advice to anyone or know what's right for anyone else. I will always share any of the experiences I've had, but ultimately the individual can come to the point where they're able to choose the experiences they need to have. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to just like an exploration. And, you know, I would, for example, point out, like, do you feel like you're in a rush? Like, is there kind of like, oh, like I got to solve this, I got to fix this, therefore I got to dive deep into like a plant medicine ceremony. Because if that's the case, we can introduce some space. We can take a few breaths and we can, you know, allow things to begin to unfold until there's enough clarity to point to the fact that like, this is my next move. Mm-hmm. And then after, given that hindsight is 2020, we get to unpack whether it was the best move or whether there was a better one. So a lot of this like process is to just like sit with whatever's happening until enough clarity arises.
So do you remember or can you recall what that first sort of draw or intuitive impulse to move towards plant medicine was coming through your recovery? Was it like a very clear, or did it come on slowly? And how did you know that it was something for you? And also, had you had previous experience with psychedelics used maybe in a different way before? So now, was it a coming back or was it like an initial introduction after your recovery? So I guess a two-part question.
Yeah, so my interest in psychedelics predated the heroin addiction and the very like maladaptive drug use that was mostly between 20-27. During the like 18-19, like that phase of my life, those years, I was curious with anything and everything, and I would take anything that you had. So I used a lot of mushrooms. I used, you know, a lot of psychedelics. Recreationally, socially for the most part, but I started to have spiritual experiences way back then. It pointed me to the fact that there's more to be discovered that I don't presently see. But then because of the nature of the very addictive drugs that I got into, all other experiences paled in comparison for those years. So I wasn't interested in any manner of like sex, relationships, dating, food, health. Like it was just my drug of choice. And then after, and then an interesting like side note, like in terms of like the feeling for the rush, like I pursued DMT during those years as like a way out, because I'd heard that, you know, DMT can just like shatter the doors of perception. It can relieve people of the suffering. So I smoked it a few times. I went ahead and injected a dose that was just way too large. And I didn't get what I was looking for because of that like deep seeking and because the inner foundation hadn't been laid. So after, you know, resolving, you know, within the context of AA, I would refer to it as the bulk of my like addictive self that was driving the drug use. I started to open up back to plant medicine. And my first like plant medicine ceremony in a ceremonial context was with psilocybin, and it was 2.5 months ago. So still like very, very new to using medicines within a more ceremonial context. Mm-hmm. But it might as well be a different substance entirely because the experience is completely different.
Different, yeah. I'm just curious, and if you don't want to go into it, you can't, but you said a way too high dose of DMT. Was that like damaging in any way? Was it just too intense? Can you remember? Is there anything you want to share around that? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, it was 75 milligrams intravenously, so all of it went in, and it was terrifying. It was just pure panic. It was just sheer terror. I wasn't sure who I was, where I was, or what I was. The like reds and oranges of the fractals just had just very, very, very scary imagery in it. I had a friend that was there, and somehow I got confused, and all of a sudden I thought that I'd been sitting there for an hour, whereas it had only been a couple minutes. So I like freaked out and I was like, I broke my brain. I got up and I tried to run. I tripped. Eventually, while I was like hopping over a fence, I kind of came down into my body, and it really gave me nothing other than a fearful experience.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes the DMT I find, and I'm not a big fan of DMT, like NMDMT specifically, just because it's just very intense and hard to unpack as to like any meaning out of it. But it is the active ingredient in ayahuasca. And I find that in an ayahuasca experience, it's like spread out over like a 6 hour with a lot of like insight and challenges and like reflection on your life. So it's interesting how, you know, we as humans are always trying to like refine and find like the more potent way of like doing something intensely. And sometimes, you know, I question, you know, like, is it better, you know, just because it's more powerful or more, you know, I guess, brought down to like the most strongest potent form. Anyways, thank you for sharing that. It was quite curious. So you're relatively new on the medicine path too. So that's also, I find that quite interesting. What I'm also really interested in is I know you did some work with a group in California. Was it the Sacred Sons? They're a men's group, and you do some men's work as well. So we started a men's group here at our studio with just some guys, more like a support group. And we find it like super impactful and powerful. And it's hard to sometimes even put your finger on what it is about it that is so deep and like the way you feel, but we all come out saying like, you know, this is something that we need. And I don't know if it's in our DNA from being in tribes and communities where nowadays we're so disconnected with, you know, like anti-social media and all these things where, you know, the human connection is lost. But I'd love you to share a bit about your experience with Sacred Sons and men's work in general. Like maybe you can even start by how you would define men's work. If someone asked you like, hey, Rich, you know, what is men's work? I saw you put a post about men's work. How would you even define it to someone who's inquiring?
Yeah, absolutely. And I post about it occasionally. It's one of the areas of my life that I'm really passionate in giving these gifts to like men, male-bodied humans, whatever like it's a term you want to like put to like this particular percentage of us. How to define it is a really good question. I see it as it's healing, I guess. It's empowering, it's connecting, and it happens through brotherhood. And really when it comes down to it, like all humans, shapes, size, genders, have struggles that they're dealing with. Some are just more likely to arise in men, and some can be better held and transmuted in a circle of just men. You know, so my experiences with Sacred Sons started in October. I went for an event that they run twice a year called Convergence, and then I stayed after that for the facilitator training. So the Convergence is an event that happens in California in the high desert, a couple hours inland, and it's an opportunity for men to gather around the world to come to a greater understanding of who they are. A lot of which comes from like understanding the obstacles to the expressions that want to come through and who they are. And they come together for the purpose of their own healing, right? They come together, and there's 120 men from all continents of the world that came to just experience what it was like to be in a brotherhood, to be surrounded by men, and to feel safe to start to express. So a lot of the healing of the masculine comes, you might be well, like you want well understand, comes from embodying the feminine. So a lot of the expression that is within us, a lot of the emotional things that we have come out in the various different modalities and like forms of practices that they include. So I felt a calling to it because of the posts that I had started to see that were reshared in my community of men like hugging, holding each other, crying, screaming, things that I had almost no experience with up until last October. I've always been a very tactile, very like touchy person. Like I love hugs. I love cuddling like that. Like all of that just like really, really makes me, it makes me feel good. And I'd only had that with women. And here I'm looking at men, like seemingly holding other men, crying with other men. And I was just like, I need that. I want that. Like that's what I'm all about. It's like, how can I just diversify my human experience? So I went, and then I came back and I started men's circles in Hamilton and Toronto based on the system that they had created. So I don't know if necessarily you want me to get into the details of what happens at Sacred Sons, but I can share some of that if you'd like.
Sure. Yeah. I'm very curious. Yeah.
Yeah. In a nutshell, at the Convergence and as part of the facilitator training, they use four pillars to like articulate four different, not articulate, but to like experience four different parts of the human. So there's like the cognitive and psychological thoughts and thinking patterns that unfold. There's the words that we use, and that's one of them. there's the physical form, and in Sacred Sons it looks like wrestling, but it's more about just being met with another man from a place of love, and from a place of like, we're on the same team and we're like against each other, and like there's an objective, but it doesn't really matter who truly wins. There's not that competitive nature. There's the relational, which is also the relational sexual as well, which is an aspect of like those two, I guess, are aspects of the way we relate to ourselves, the way we relate to our sexual energy. You know, and in those as well, like a lot of it is through like, let's say breath work. A lot of it might be through sharing. A lot of it is partner work. So they refer to the four archetypes, the king, warrior, lover, magician quite often. And a lot of teachings come from that particular section of understandings.
Very cool. And so how has your experience been bringing it back into like Hamilton and Toronto? Is it been well received, and the experiences people are experiencing what you experienced over there? Tell me a bit about how it's spreading, what the feedback's been, and what guys are like getting out of it. So what's a typical person that shows up at one of these things? Like, how would you describe that?
Someone that comes to one of these men's circles is a man who's seeking a connection. It's either a connection to another man or a connection to himself, but probably both. So someone that would really benefit from a men's circle has something that they want to share, but they just haven't felt safe to share it with like their male friends or their male female friends or their family. A lot of the culture around, you know, what it like means to be a man in North America, I'm under the impression means to like get together, like drink beers, watch sports, you know, to go to nightclubs and things like that. And I've been in those areas. I'm going to say outright, my intention is not to cast a judgment on that. That is great for like what a lot of people want to experience, but I had had that and I was just interested in something else. I was interested in relating on a deeper level. And at these men's circles, and they started as soon as I got back and they ended at COVID. So right now we're doing a couple things online, but during those few months, we really started to establish deeper connections and deeper supports and trust. Because men are carrying our own wounds, right? We have our own trauma. Just so happens that most of the man that trauma carries was given to him by another man. And it's often placed onto another man or onto a woman. That's just like kind of the way it goes. So being held by other men, either like physically through like a shadow work process or energetically in a group, just being given your full like love and attention to someone else, is just a beautiful experience to be had. And I will add that I do think that you are like quite on the mark when you look at our ancestral like genetic lineages and the fact that we did things as a team. Like you would never like build a castle on your own, build a ship on your own, plow a field on your own. Like we had teams and we had tribes and we supported each other. And it's the like industrialization and the modernization and the like individuality that is just like the pinnacle of what it means to be a successful human is to be made on your own. Coming back full circle to like what we opened with, that I think is it's really difficult to come to a point where we start to understand that there's a lot of power to be had in community.
Amazing. And yeah, it's something like the whole men's group thing, you know, maybe like a year and a half ago, something that was not even really even on my radar. And now, you know, you see it popping up, different groups, different types of men's group and support and masterminds. Why do you think that is now all of a sudden it's really, or has it been there all the time? I just wasn't seeing it. Or do you think now there's like a resurgence of this sort of maybe demand or interest? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Two answers to that question. One, Mankind Project is, I think, the best known and the oldest like men's movement. It's been around for, I think, 40 or 50 years. I don't have any experiences working with their system of men's work. But I do know that this like has been being like done, and this is like something that's been going on. I think, and my perception is very similar to yours in the way in which I watch it unfold on social media, and then I hear about it kind of in other circles. And I think it's coming back up to the surface because the women have been doing this stuff, and the women are celebrating it, and like, you know, openly like advertising it, and they've been in this space for a little bit longer than us, I would say. On average, of course. So it seemed like women have had their like full moon circles, their like new moon circles, their like women's things, and they've been just celebrating this ability to like share and connect. And men are finally seeing that and recognizing that we get to do that too. And ultimately, what I would love to see in this lifetime is like a coming togetherness of men and women, where like the men have been doing their work, the women have been doing their work, and ultimately we can bring it together, because isn't that the goal?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. So I guess just the next question would just be around like what's most exciting to you right now? Is there any projects you're working on or anything that like you're really super interested in that can be something you're interested in learning or launching, or like what's really got your mind these days and your heart?
There's about a dozen of them. So maybe I'll just refer to the top two or three. A lot of my personal work has been steering more into the realm of Taoist, tantric, like learning to work with energy systems, subtle energy systems. So I'm doing this within my own body, my own practice, and with partners as well. And a lot of my coaching comes down to like getting free, like getting unstuck within, you know, a lot of it is expression. Some of it is sexuality. So presently the lens through which I view the world is from like understanding like what it means to have masculine and feminine components. And like Taoist and tantric teachings and literature refer to this stuff in many different ways, but we don't have time to get into the depths of that. So like right now, I'm in the process of just the first preliminary steps in building a program for individuals and couples to just like reestablish their own connection to themselves, their own sexuality, intimacy. And many, many women do this, and I haven't seen as many men doing this and supporting men in uncovering these parts of themselves. So that's one thing that I'm super, super excited about, because I found it like becoming free and becoming unstuck, has been, you know, one of the most beautiful experiences I've had. So that's what I'm bringing to others. At the end of September, September 21st, I think we've scheduled, John DePass and I, and then I think one more man will be on board as well, are creating an online and in-person like summit, like around health, self-love, embodiment, empowerment. And we're going to have an in-person event on the 27th of September, which is a Sunday as well. And that's going to be geared to men only. So we're just fleshing out the details right now. It was 2 days ago that it really started to take shape and create itself. But what I love is working with other people, right? So if there's anyone listening that like is resonating with anything I'm saying, like please reach out to me, because I work well in a team. Like I work well when there's like three of us or two of us or five of us that are creating something together. You know, so online men's circles are something that happens once a month. And that's just like another like group that I'm part of. So as I'm sure you can see, like I'm in multiple different areas of what I think is ultimately going to be helpful to a lot of people.
Awesome. Yeah, that's exciting. Both those things are exciting. So I guess if someone is like sort of feeling that call, but they don't know where to go, like that like, yeah, you know, this sounds good, men's work sounds like something for me, like what would you recommend? Like how did you find?
I'd say message someone who's doing it, which is what I did. Mm-hmm. Right, which is apparently you, apparently me as well. Because there's a lot of magic to be had there, and there's a lot of beautiful experiences to be had. So I'd say just message someone who's in it, who's doing it, and then tag along.
Yeah, like I'm sure like a lot of men, and I don't know how I want to say this, but we have a lot of fear around the perception of being in a men's group. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, that's for wussies, or oh, like whatever. But I think that's just a block that they have inside trying to like, yeah, the fear of change, right? So if you're listening and you're feeling that, it's okay to feel like, oh, that sounds weird, or that's not for me. But like really, really ask yourself where that judging voice is coming from. Is it maybe trying to protect you from like shadow aspect of yourself that you're not expressing that really needs that? And there's something there. It's like, hey, remember when you were a kid and you expressed yourself and you were told to shut up or people laughed at you? So yeah, like if there's like that little sort of flicker of intuitive sort of curiosity, I would say it's definitely something worth exploring or at least talking to someone about. And, you know, I guess from my experience, men's work doesn't even have to be joining a group. It's like finding someone you can confide in and being vulnerable with them, you know, another man, and just sharing deeply with them and expressing yourself to someone that you trust, you know. And I'm sure most of the time even that is hard for men, you know, to have someone they can confide in and share openly, like, hey, I don't feel good, or I'm depressed, or, you know, I get these, I'm sad, you know, like men are not supposed to be sad, you know, based on the way most of us are brought up. So anything you want to add to that, as far as, you know, that type of mindset that some guys might have, they're probably really needing to join the men's group?
Yeah. The first thing that came to mind is that, like, doing this work is the sexiest thing you can do. Right? Like, to embody these emotions and, like, get in touch with yourself is really what the world, what other men and women want from all of us. Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, really coming to understanding that, you know, to get to a point where we're able to reach out for, and even like terms like reach out for help, and even men's work as a term isn't exactly accurate. Like, I love the way that you put that, like, you can get together with another dude and just to start to share what you feel safe to share. A quick look at my Instagram has photos of me naked, photos of me crying, photos of me laughing.
I love your Instagram
dancing. Like, I'm out there. Like, I'll be the first one to say that, like, the level of vulnerability that I'm able to experience today took practice. I would never recommend that someone just, like, blow open their heart and start to share everything, because that could be traumatizing to the nervous system. When I, like, make posts that are quite triggering and upsetting to people, when I'm talking about things like grief, or when I'm talking about BDSM, I've gotten to the point where, like, I can let that rock my nervous system, and I'll, like, be a little bit on edge and anxious for a couple days. But, you know, there's steps to be taken. So the first suggestion that I would make is there one thing that's on your mind that's been, like, kind of in the background that you've wanted to share with one other person? And can you find one person that you feel safe with to share that? And that's the start and the end of men's work.
Mm. Beautiful. Well said. So if people want to reach out or connect with you, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you? Do you have a website? I know you have a Instagram. Can you share some of those contacts?
I'm building the website right now, so it's not yet available. It's going to be richardfilk.com. Best way is Instagram, though. Rich Reflect is my handle.
Rich Reflect. @RichReflect. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. And I guess, just in closing, are you reading any books right now? Is there anything that, I think you said something about the Taoist philosophy.
Yeah. I'm reading a lot of literature that is Taoist or like tantric in origin, but the one book that I would put forth that I read and reread and reread again is Conversations with God. That book, if I had to choose one, has radically shifted so many parts of me, inside me, and really at the core of it, it puts the responsibility for my life square in my lap, and it addresses many major questions that all people have around, like, why can't I, like, find the right partner? Why am I arguing with so-and-so? Why are my finances in arrears? Why is my health this and that and the other? It addresses many questions that run quite deep for many of us. The title is what the title is. And if anyone has any resistance to the word God, then I'd encourage them all the meanwhile to just lean into their resistance, see past the title, and take a look at it, because I think that book is it's really, really a valuable resource.
Cool. I guess my last question would be, if tomorrow the government mandated that every single man needed to be a part of a men's group to, you know, drive or live in Canada or in the world, what do you think would happen? And they had to go to at least, you know, a set amount of meetings openly.
That's such a great question. I think many of them would be really angry. I think many of them would be extremely resistant. And I think there'd be a polarization, because I think there'd be a whole camp of men that just aren't ready and just don't want this, that would just, like, go hard into, like, screw that. But then I think there are many that are, like, on the edge that are listening to this, that are like, I've been interested in this, or I'm now interested in this. Those men would be pushed into, let's try this out. I don't ever think you should force anyone to do anything, though, but that's probably another discussion for another podcast.
Well, yeah, like, ask these questions because, you know, like, and we won't get into this, but we talk about government caring about health and, you know, this thing about vaccinations that's coming up about mandatory, not mandatory. You know, it's like, why don't they make fast food, you know, obsolete, and alcohol and sugar content and all these things, if they really cared? But then there's, like, these positive things. You could say, hey, like, everyone's assigned a group, you know, like, once a week you have to go check in and get, you know, stuff like that. Like, you know, it could be possible. And I think that also, like, the more guys that are doing inner work, whether it's men's work, group work, breath work, whatever, as they're shifting, the people around them that trust them, even though they might not be ready, they're going to start seeing a shift. It's like, oh, yeah, something's different about Rich. You know, what is it? I can't put my finger on it. They might come and inquire, like, hey, I'm not feeling so good. You seem to be so happy. What did you do? And like, that's how the conversation starts. And then automatically you almost become a lighthouse for others without even intentionally trying to. You just keep working on yourself and then people take notice. And initially for me too, it was like, yeah, I want to share this. I want to like get people to like see what I'm seeing. And I realized that doesn't work. But it's when they start seeing on their own accord. I was just listening today, like if you're over 25, to get someone to change their mind is almost impossible. Mm. They have to be willing to want to change their mind, to sort of seek it. And the only way to do that is to show them, not tell them. It's to like be yourself in your fullest expression. They're like, hey, wait a minute, there's something different. And I want it. I'm curious. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Pushing anything on anyone usually will have the opposite of the intended outcome. But instead, like you're saying, being the lighthouse, attracting the people to you, showing up and doing the thing, renders it almost like completely unnecessary to discuss the ins and outs. Like the people that are interested in this stuff will find people like you and I that are doing it, just like I found, you know, the men that were doing it when I became interested. My intention is just to continue to share openly, honestly. I'm radically transparent with everything that I'm going through. You know, usually within a couple hours, like I have an experience that I posted, but it used to take a couple of weeks. But yeah, that's my intention. And the people that find me will find me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, brother, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing, for the transformation you've undertaken, the courage that it takes to sort of transform yourself. And then, you know, the way you put yourself out there and the way you openly share with others. So a lot of respect for that. And also thank you for coming and sharing on this podcast. And, you know, I'm hoping that sometime in the near future, we will collaborate in some way or another, whether it be a men's retreat or all this, I guess, is a collaboration right here, sharing our stories. But thank you from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate you, and hopefully get to see you soon.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for steering this conversation and creating this container for us to dive in and open up. So I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. Okay, guys, thanks for tuning in. Again, check out Rich. Rich Reflect.
Yep.
And richardfilk.com coming soon. Write that down. And is there an email? Do you have an email that they can reach out if they want to reach out to you? Or is that through Instagram the best way to reach you?
Instagram is the best. Yeah.
Instagram. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. And if you like this, please share it with your friends, anyone you think needs to hear it. You can subscribe as well. Thank you for those, for all your support to date. Much, much appreciated. And we'll see you guys soon. Peace.